up, huh? You said, thought you were gonna see the same old ones over and over, but no, something surprise. You gotta come pay attention each week. Good morning, glad you guys are here. Welcome to Jericho Road Church. What do? We love God and we love others. And what do we love to say? I love God and I love you. Man, I love saying that. I'm glad you guys are here, whether you're with us in person or online, however you're joining us and the Lord. I pray your day is gonna be filled with the Holy Spirit. So welcome today to our final message in the background series. Like, we've been talking about people who are in the Bible and they're not very famous. They don't either have any name recognition or maybe a lot of times they're not even named at all. And yet they make a profound impact on the people that are around them. And I think that this is a picture of most of us. Like, most of us historically, we're not going to go down in the history books as famous folks. You know, most of us aren't going to go down and, you know, be... We're going to go down as normal, regular people. But that doesn't mean that we don't have an incredible impact on the people that are around us right now. And so though we may not be famous, or maybe we don't have name recognition, or maybe we don't have 10 million followers on whatever social media platform you're familiar with, older Facebook, you know, and Snapchat or whatever. I don't even think that exists anymore. But, you know, maybe we're not going to be that famous. And that's okay, because we can still have an incredible impact on those people that are around us. Today we're going to finish with these two ladies who don't even have names in the Bible. They're widows. They live in completely different environments, completely different times, and we're going to look at both of them because they've decided in their lives to put God above all else. They've decided to have this like all-in mentality on God in order to honor him. And so our first widow is found in the Old Testament, and it's part of the greater narrative of Elijah the prophet. And whenever you read it, we always read about Elijah, 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 and then it's always about Elijah. And if you've heard a Bible study, it's about Elijah. And so when we're doing this in the background, I'd like us to shift our vision just a bit and try to look at it from the perspective of this widow as we're picking it up here in 1 Kings chapter 17. So sometime later, the brook where Elijah was sitting by it dried up because there had been no rain in the land. Then the word of the Lord came to him being Elijah, "Go at once to Zarephath in the region of Sidon and stay there. I've directed a widow there to supply you with food." So he went to Zarephath. So God's doing this work that Elijah doesn't even understand. Elijah's like, okay, I'll go where you tell me to go. Now, the place where Elijah's currently sitting, he's sitting in this ravine that was a creek, and then it dries up, and it's about 85 miles away from Zarephath. And now for us, that's not that big of a deal, you know, an hour and a half drive. But 85 miles at this time, when there were no roads, the Greeks and the Romans hadn't paid any roads around, so it was all overland, by foot, traveling maybe, you know, anywhere from 8 to 10 miles a day. It's going to take you a week to 2 weeks to get to this place. And so God says, I want you to walk over to that place and get there. And you got to remember, because like, sometimes the verses go so fast, it seems like it happens like this, right? But it doesn't. He tells Elijah, I've directed a widow already. So there's someone waiting for you. I've already told her to like supply you with food. And so she's way over there. She's already heard a message from God, and she's waiting on the prophet Elijah. Now it's going to take him, what, 10 to 20 days to get there, depending on how fast he's going to walk. And so so here's where we find this widow, the first mention of this widow. And as we're thinking about it, a widow at this time, women in general in the ancient Near East were a little disadvantaged. And by being a widow, we would automatically understand that she was economically disadvantaged, that she would, in society, have a little bit of a lower place. Now, she could probably make do. She'd have to rely on some family and friends. But the position that she's in is really a vulnerable sort of position. It's a position that would be considered among the least of the people. And so people would maybe pity her, but right? But she would still not have any advantages from that pity. So this widow, she's going to remain unnamed. She's just this the widow that happened to do this throughout the rest of this narrative. And it doesn't get much more in the background than an unnamed widow who is the lowest of this current economic and social status in the ancient Near East. And so here's what happens in the next couple of verses in 1 Kings 17. When he came to the town gate, the widow was there. She's gathering sticks. And he called her, "Would you bring me a little water in a jar so I could have a drink?" And she goes ahead and goes to get it, right? As she's going to get it, he says, "Oh, and bring me a piece of bread and some water." What a good man. You're my new favorite. Yay, Isaiah. Thank you. So there's some sort of witty joke right there, but I'm not smart enough to make it. So would you bring me a little water in a jar so I could drink? And he says, oh, and also bring me a, please bring me a piece of bread. And she's like, as surely as the Lord your God lives, I don't got any bread. I got a handful of flour in a jar and a tiny bit of olive oil in a jug. And I was just gathering these sticks up here to go home to make a meal for myself and my son that we could eat it and then die. Maybe she's being dramatic, I don't know. But remember this beginning of this passage, that God had already told her, directed her to supply this prophet, but that had been 2 weeks before. Right? So maybe 2 weeks before, she didn't have just a handful left. 2 weeks before, she probably had, you know, five quarts of flour left and a whole half a jug of oil left. And so when God says, like, oh yeah, could you take care of my prophet? At that time, she was probably like, sure, no problem. But what's going to happen when she gets down to her last bit? See, sometimes God's like that, you know? Sometimes it's way easier to give, I don't know about you, but it's way easier to give out of my abundance. And when God asks for something out of my abundance, I'm like, yeah, sure, okay, and I don't even think about it. It's not, it's almost not even for God. It's just because, like, yeah, sure, you know, I don't mind being a good person and that kind of stuff, and it doesn't hurt me that much. And I wonder if God allows this travel all the time. Remember, God didn't have to direct her way before. He could have waited and then told her that same day, but he didn't. He told her way before, all the time where he's traveling. And so she had said, yes, her supplies are dwindling. They're at the bottom of the barrel part, and he's like, oh, make me a sandwich with that last bit that you have. So will she be as generous with her last handful as she would have been with, you know, a little bit more? Now, I think her statement does indicate that she's in dire straits. It's not like she has an abundance at this point. Now, whether she's actually going to die right after this or not, I don't know. But at least she's saying it this way. I mean, she's talking about her actual last meal with her kid and her. Like, that she thought that there's a possibility at least to die from it. And then God asked her to give that up. She's pretty sure she needs that, right? Like, it, all logic tells her that she should make food and eat it. She's hungry. She hasn't eaten all day, and her kid hasn't eaten all day. And all logic, all reasonable minds would say that you should just keep that for yourself, and then you should use it for yourself. Yet, God asks her to do something different. And then her sacrifice leads to the greatest miracle she's going to see in her life. Well, you'd think that. Actually, her son dies later, and then God raises him from the dead. So she sees a second greater miracle. But at this point, she hasn't seen any miracles. She hasn't. And then this sacrifice of her giving up this little, it will mean that she's going to step into this miracle of God, her willingness to give it all, her willingness to trust that God will take care of the situation. So I try to think about it. Like, what if she is, like, being overdramatic, and maybe she doesn't give to the prophet, right? And then she eats the bread, and worst case scenario, she does die. And if that's the case, she's going to miss the miracle that God has planned in just a second. But maybe she's being overdramatic, and maybe she eats the bread, and then doesn't die, and then just figures it out. But also in that situation, she would miss the miracle of God as well. And so only by her willingness to sacrifice, to be all in on God and say, God, I'm going to trust you with everything, only in that position will she see the miracles of God. Will she see the amazingness of God? So here's what happens. Elijah says to her, don't be afraid. Go home and do as you've said. But first, make a small loaf of bread for me from what you have and bring it to me. And then make something for yourself and your son. For this is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says. The jar of flour will not be used up, and the jug of oil will not run dry until the day the Lord sends rain. Like, but I'm looking at that statement, and Elijah seems pretty ruthless, right? He says, go make me out of the one you have for sure. Make my food out of that. Bring it to me. Then go home and make your own. And don't worry, God's going to provide a miracle where your flour will never end and your oil will never end. But bring me mine first. And I don't know about you, but I'm a little skeptical all the time. And I'd be like, yeah, right. I'm going to go make that cake, bring it back, go to get my miracle. That guy dips. He's like running to the next town. I go home and I got nothing left. Like, that's the skeptic in me almost tries to, like, is he trying to trick me? But I don't know. I don't think so. I look carefully back at that passage, pull that up again, and it says, he says, go make mine out of what you have left. Like, go take the last, the bottom of the barrel part and make that for me, and then go back and make something for yourself. She's going to eat from the abundance. She's going to have the miracle meal, not this, like, last hand sweaty, like, drool on the bottom of the bucket, like, sort of one, right? The last sip out of the soda. She's not having that one. He says, like, go give me the last sip, and you're going to eat of this miracle. Now, at this point, it's still just a promise. It's not a reality yet. So she's got to decide how she's going to act. What's she going to do? Is she going to obey God and say, God, I'm going to trust you. I'm going to trust your prophet. I'm going to go believe that somehow bread will multiply or flour will multiply in my pot and oil will multiply in my pot. That's not real. That doesn't really happen. That's fake. That's not like, that's pretend. That's not, I don't believe in magic. I believe in you, God. Is she going to believe in that? Could that actually possibly come true? God's asking her to trust him, not only with her own life and her son's life, to put outside the thing that seems normal, rational, and possible, and to trust him with the seemingly impossible. But she does. Check out what happens. So she goes away, and she did as Elijah told her. So then there was food every day that Elijah was there, and for the woman and for her family. For the jar of flour was not used up, and the jug of oil did not run dry, in keeping with the word of the Lord spoken by Elijah. So we discover here that she heard about the promise, he gives it again, and then she actually follows through. She obeys on this promise, on God's directing. She trusted him in the face of the seemingly impossible. She trusted God with the most precious thing in her life, with her own kid's life. She took a gamble on God, and she said, okay, God, I'm going to trust you with this, even though it doesn't maybe make any sense. And then she gets to participate in the impossible because she acted in obedience. How easy would it be to dismiss the prophet and just figure it out on her own? And I'm thinking about it, and I wonder if in our lives that is one of our problems. When you look at your life and you encounter your life and you encounter the situations in your life, do you try to just figure it out on your own? What's our go-to move? All right, someone gets sick in your family. What's the first thing you do? You go to the doctor. That's the first thing I do. All right? Oh, I Google it probably. Are they going to die? Then I go to the doctor. If I'm having money troubles, what are the first thing I do? I pull up my Wells Fargo bank statement and my credit card to see what my limits are, to see if I can kind of balance out the budget. If I'm having trouble with someone at your workplace, what do? Complain to your other coworkers, complain to your husband, HR if it's like really bad, right? I think in all those situations, that's us always trying to figure it out. Whenever we face difficulties in our lives, whenever we face troubles in our life, I worry that our go-to move is to just figure it out ourselves. How many people in every one of those situations, the first thing you do is go to God and say, God, I want to see you. And I wonder if by trying to figure it out on our own, we have missed miracles of God all in our lives because we don't even bother to go to him first. So I think of my life like, gosh, I would love to. I'm not saying I do it. I would love to be able to, someone's sick, and the first thing I do is to pray for them to get healed. And maybe I go to the doctor. I'm not against doctors. But is the doctor the first thing we do and figuring it out ourselves the first thing we do? Or do we turn to God to see the impossible? How many miracles have we missed because we've just tried to figure it out? Maybe the widow would have lived and she would have been fine and just hungry a couple of days. But then if she hadn't obeyed, she would have missed God's miracles. And I wonder by us always trying to do everything on our own and not even remembering to look to God, not even thinking about God, that we've missed miracles in our life. Rather than navigate on her own, this woman trusts God with her very life and her son's life. She gives to God the last bit that she had to eat, literally giving him everything she needed to live. Now, our next widow, some 900 years later, this is recorded in Mark. Jesus, he sat down opposite the place where the offerings were being put in. They like put them in the front, and then people would drop like coins into a metal container, so it would make, you know, if you're rich, a lot of noise. And if you're poor, it'd be like, dink, dink. Or if you're cheap, it'd be like, dink, dink. And so he's watching the people come in and put in their money into the temple treasury. Many rich people, they threw in large amounts. But a poor widow, she came in, she put in two very small copper coins, worth only a few cents. Calling his disciples to him, Jesus said, and he's across the room, remember. He says, truly I tell you, this poor widow has put more into the treasury than all the others. They gave out of their wealth, but she, out of her poverty, put in everything. And Jesus does know this as a reality. All she had to live on. Man, this woman's always been one of my heroes since I met her. Jesus said, like this lady, she put in all that she had to live on. She was deciding as she walked up to that, you know, up to the giving thing. She's like, I know I got two tiny little coins. Should I give them both and not eat today? Not pay the rent today? Well, probably rent's more than two copper coins. Or maybe I should keep one and like eat a little bit and then maybe give God one. But she gets up to there and she's like, you know what? Whatever. I'm all in on this. I'm going to give them all to God. Doesn't matter. I'm going to put it all in and give it all to God. Now, she doesn't know Jesus is watching. She doesn't do it for any recognition. Like, we don't even, in the passage, we don't see anywhere in the Bible where Jesus goes up to her later and says, like, great job, or something like that. Or, like, here's $1,000 for your two pennies. Nothing like that. If I imagine she probably just went hungry that day. That was her lunch money. You know, that's all she had to live on for the day. I don't know if she got any more money. But she didn't get noticed. She didn't get recognized, at least from her perspective, right? She put that in. She walked out. She didn't know she was going to make the Bible, right? She's not trying to be like, oh, I bet I get in the Bible if I throw these two in here. This future thing that she doesn't even know is going to be written, right? There's no way. So from her perspective, she got zero recognition. Can't be more in the background than that. She puts all she has to live on. No more money for food, rent, that's it. There wasn't a plan B, it doesn't seem like. There's no holding back. She's not planning for a comfortable future. She's not trying to do her own thing. She says, God, I'm going to give it all to you. One time when I was seriously broke, now I'm not broke. Now I have plenty of money and God's totally provided for me. But there was a time when I was really broke, when I didn't always know where my rent would come from, rent money, and I didn't always know where my food money would come from when I was trying to put myself through college. And there was one time we went to a church prayer meeting it was a Friday night meeting, and there was a missionary, I can't remember the details exactly, I think there was a missionary that was there and we were praying for them, and then they're like, okay, we're also going to take an offering for the missionary. And I was like, oh no, like I'm like broke. And so like I grab my wallet and pull it out and look, and I have $20. I knew I had $20 in there. I don't normally carry cash, but that was the money that I had. Like, I didn't have any money in my bank. That was the money I had until my next paycheck to take care of, like, all my food, you know? And they're like, yeah, this missionary really needs the money or whatever. And I was like, well, I really need the money too, you know? And they're praying, and I was like, oh, what should I do? What should I do? And I didn't really actually think about it too long. I thought about this widow, how she was just, like, all in or whatever. And then I was like, you know what? Done. I'm going to be like that lady. And then so I put it in, and then prayer meeting ended. And as I was thinking about the story to share with you guys, I don't even know what happened after that. I don't have a miracle where God, provided feasts or something. But clearly I didn't die. And clearly I am well fed if you're, God took care of it. And I can't say, this was the miracle where it did, because I don't even remember how it did. You know, sometimes you do something and then you just kind of forget about it. But I put it all in and I survived. And God has clearly taken care of me since then. And so I know that I have a lot of flaws. And I know I've made plenty of mistakes in my life. One thing I can say, though, is that when I made Jesus the Lord of my life, when I knelt on my bed and I said, Jesus, if you love me enough, at that time it was a whole story about my shoes and stuff. If you love me enough to take care of my feet, then you can have all of me. And that moment, I was all in for God. And this is more than 30 years ago. And I told him that he could have everything. And I have attempted to live that way ever since then. I've attempted to have this idea where, like, God, I want to be all in for you. Because I took literally the words of Jesus where he says something like this, and I still do, where his words are recorded by Luke. It says, when Jesus was talking, he said, if anyone wants to come after me and they don't hate their father and mother or their wife and their children, their brothers and sisters, yes, even their own life, such a person cannot be my disciple. And whoever does not take up their cross daily, deny themselves and follow me, cannot be my disciple. See, just like that widow, Jesus is looking for people who are all in on him, not holding back, not a safety net other than God. He's interested in people that are more interested in God than they are in their own comfort, their own life, their own ability to figure it out, their own agenda, or even their own needs. God is interested in the type of people who will say, God, I want to push it all in for you. But it isn't just in the New Testament and Jesus. God has always been interested in this. That's why the psalmist writes this, God, I am always with you. You hold me by my right hand. You guide me with your counsel, and afterward you'll take me into glory. Whom have I in heaven but you? And earth has nothing I desire besides you. My flesh and my heart fail, but God is strength of my heart, and he's my portion forever. See what he says? I have nothing on this earth that I desire but you. I mean, this world is okay, but it better not hold our hearts. And so today I want to say, like, are we living an all-in life for God? Are we living the all-in life that God asks from each of us? Are we like those widows willing to put everything in, even if it won't make any sense? People may think you're stupid for doing it. People may think you're, well, why would you just go all in? You could just have a Sunday. That's fine, just a couple hours. Why would you be all in on God? And I think it's important for us to occasionally take stock of our lives and to check the trajectory of our sort of souls and our spiritual lives. And this is one of those mornings where I'm asking you to just take stock of where you are. No guilt, no pressure, no nothing. Just where are you and where does God want you to be and what's your current trajectory? Is it more you or is it more God? Is it more I'll figure it out or more God, I'm going to trust you with all things? What is your trajectory and what is the status of your soul this morning? See, over the last 4 weeks, we've been seeing that it's not about getting noticed. It's not about being famous. It's not even about myself. But it's about God. It's about faithfully following God and being all in on him. You guys are probably familiar with the famous Jim Elliot. Pretty famous. It's a famous missionary guy who penned these words 3 months before he was killed. He wrote this. He is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. And that's exactly what we're talking about. Old Testament, New Testament. Here, Jim Elliot saying the same thing. Now, Jim Elliot was killed in the first contact that he had with these tribal people he was trying to reach. So he spent years learning the language, prepping, got all the missionary support money, went down to the Amazon jungle, search, finally landed on the beach. His first encounter with them, they killed him. He didn't share the gospel with them. They didn't meet Jesus through Jim Elliot. He died. He got killed. Missionary failure, right? And it would be if that was the end of his story. Well, that was the end of his story, but that was the end of the story of him. As you guys know, and many of you know, later his wife returned back to the same tribesperson. Her and the wives of four or five of the men who were killed. And they couldn't believe that these women would come back. And like we killed your husbands, and they're like, yep, but we're here anyway. And most of that tribe who had killed Jim Elliot and the missionaries, almost all that tribe came to Christ. And not only that tribe, but multiple tribes happened to get sick at the same time. And God was doing this incredible thing in this area. And multiple tribes all throughout this previously unreached region came to Christ because of that sacrifice. Now, that story we're pretty familiar with. But I'm not sure you knew this, but Jim Elliot loved to journal. And they actually found Jim Elliot's journal by the rescue team that came and found the bodies. And here are the last words that he wrote either the morning before this happened or the evening before. We're not sure exactly when he penned it. These were the last words he wrote as he was waiting for the natives to come. He didn't know he was going to get killed. He said, I walked out on the hill just now. It is exalting, delicious to stand embraced by the shadows of a friendly tree with the wind tugging at your coattail and the heavens hailing your heart, to gaze in glory and give oneself again to God. What more could a man ask? Oh, the fullness, the pleasure, the sheer excitement of knowing God on earth. I care not if I never raise my voice again for him, if only I may love him and please him. Perhaps in mercy he shall give me a host of children, i.e. converts, that I may lead them through the vast star fields to explore his delicacies whose finger ends sets them to burning. But if not, if only I may see him, touch his garments, smile into his eyes, ah, then not stars nor children shall matter, only himself. And a widow in the Old Testament, another in the New, they gave all they had to honor God. He mattered more than their own lives. They had this all-in mentality for God. And God calls all of us to that mentality. Maybe it's in giving money. Maybe it's in going on missions. Maybe it's sharing the gospel at your work. And sharing your gospel at work is harder than going on missions, I think. On missions, you're like, it's like a whole thing. But to share at your work, to love your family day in and day out, even when they're frustrating, and your extended family when they're frustrating, to trust God with things that you can't handle, that seem impossible, to not just figure it out on your own, but to be different because you're saying, God, I'm all in on you. I'm going to trust you with however this stuff falls out. Because I just want to be near you, and I just want to love you, and I just want to follow you the best that I can. So whether God calls you to be a pastor like myself, or a student, or a business person, or a stay-at-home parent, God calls each of us to be willing to say, I want to give it all to you, God, to honor you, God, in that kind of mentality. So I want you to take a minute before we're going to stand up and we're going to close in a worship song. I just want to take you a minute to do that, or at least to begin the soul assessment, the trajectory assessment, and to consider whether you're trusting yourself or you're trusting God in your situations. Are you all in for him, or are you all in for you? Are you all in for God's kingdom or the world's kingdom? So just take a minute between you and God and make that assessment, and then we're going to close in worship of him.